Hello, and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPod Gaming Podcast, episode number 111B, because last week was 111, when it was in fact 110. With me on this special half-podcast is Tracy Erickson.
Hello!
And John Jordan.
Hello.
And I'm well, just in case you haven't heard.
You're well?
Well, I am well, actually. Thank you.
You were sick. Are you going to die? Oh, my God, John. We need to do something.
Whoa, what's going on? Wait, no. Oi. No.
Oi.
They're just going to take you away. Just relax.
You're
going
to
feel
doing?
A little poke.
I think we should go straight to the news.
News!
So, yeah, first up in the news. I guess it's the big Apple corporate news. Well, yeah, let's call it the Apple corporate news section. That sounds exciting. It doesn't really. It sounds quite boring. But Steve Jobs is off. He's on off on medical leave again. This isn't the first time it's happened. Last time, how many years ago? Two, three?
Two years ago.
2 years ago. Mm. Yeah, they haven't said why. Just medical reasons. And he's left COO Tim Cook in charge of the company. And of course, the minute they declared that, or he declared that, that he was leaving for a bit, the share price collapsed.
Well, it didn't actually, because cleverly they did it when America was on holiday.
Yeah, so. But the German stock market fell by 9%.
That doesn't count.
But I did my research. Yeah, I got you. Yes, so yeah, so clever timing, because the US stock market was closed for Martin Luther King Jr. Day, was it?
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah. So, so he's not at the head of the company for now. But still confident of exciting plans for 2011, according to the strapline to our story. So, yeah, wish him a speedy recovery. Of course, the stand-in, Tim Cook, quickly got into his job earlier this week, in a financial report, and basically had a go at all of Android tablets. In sort of true Steve Jobs fashion.
He kind of had a go at everything that wasn't Apple, wasn't he?
Yeah, basically. So Android tablets are either bizarre or vapid.
Although to be fair, he was nothing like the Steve Jobs performance at the last earnings call, where he just turned up and slagged everything off. <It's just> unbelievable.
He's getting warmed up though. It's just, you know, it's a primer.
Right. I don't know.
Start off like running and then build up to something. So keeping with the Apple news. So there was a financial call this week, so obviously we know a lot of their financial stuff. There's millions of new iPad and iPhone and iPod Touch owners. So that's good. And the iPad itself has sold over 16 million, I think.
No, it hasn't.
No, it hasn't. No. What has it sold?
Slightly under 15. I think it's 14.8. 14.8, yeah.
You see, I didn't do my research on that one. I just made up the number.
Did. Well, far off, but... You know.
Yeah, it was only two.
It doesn't make it any less impressive.
Yeah.
I think the big number, though, is how many devices, total iOS devices, 160 million?
60 million, yeah.
Ow. That, actually a good debate that was going on, well, a short one, on the comment section regarding that figure, because someone was... I think the story is, you know, impressive both from a figure standpoint, because it's 160 million, which is insane, but also from a gaming standpoint, because if you say, you know, a certain fraction of those people that own an iOS device are also playing games, that's a hell of a lot of game players. And somebody was saying, oh, well, just because, you know, they're not game machines, and so therefore, you know, it doesn't really mean anything. Well, the data that we just saw out of Apple, that 9 out of the top 10 best-selling iPhone apps ever since the App Store was opened are games. So the majority of the apps that people are buying are games.
Although you have to equally say that, as far as we know, no one's sold more than, I don't know, what's that? I can't remember what Angry Birds is at the moment on iPhone. I'm not sure they've announced it. But, you know, it seems to be like 10 million would seem to be the absolute limit.
Yeah.
And it was kind of interesting that on the US App Store, I think Doodle Jump was still the highest on the top 10 of all time. Whereas I think in the UK it was Angry Birds. So But anyway, so even though you got this big number, 160 million, you've still not, in terms of, some of those won't be active anymore because they'll be old iPhone 2Ds and 3Gs and whatever. But you're still getting, even the most popular game is still only being downloaded onto probably less than 10% of devices.
That's surely just because there's quite a lot of apps to download from as well, to pick from.
Maybe. I mean, but I guess you would kind of say that the ones that rise to the top are the really famous ones. Then they're obviously they're the most likely ones. I guess the issue is whether people will, even at 99 cents, people are going to buy an Angry Birds when they can get the free version. So that would be the
issue. I think it's an excellent point. But I guess to further my point, I'd say what PSP game has sold 10 million copies? How many DS games? I know there are DS games that have sold 10 million copies.
Monster Hunter.
But they're very rare.
But there's only 50 million PSPs anyway, so you obviously...
Exactly.
It'd be 3 million. But yeah, no, I take the point.
Yeah. I mean, granted, the iOS releases are at lower price points. I don't know. I mean, I just think it's an interesting snapshot of where the iOS platform is, particularly as we're going into the start of a new sort of cycle in terms of portable gaming with 3DS and what we assume will be either a PSP smartphone or completely brand new device. So it's just interesting to say,
probably both.
Right, exactly, which is very confusing, which we can talk about at some other time. But I just think it's interesting because people, there's always been this debate about, who exactly is playing games on iPhone and iPod Touch? And in a way, it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm willing to grant someone, sure, maybe it's like only a quarter of those 160 million iOS owners are actually active on the App Store, and of that quarter, of that 40 million, maybe only half are buying games. That's that 20 million users are very active.
From purely personal experience, I don't think I've ever met someone who owns an iPhone and who hasn't bought at least a game, even when they're not actually gamers. They buy a game. I don't know.
It's been so pervasive. Before we move on, there was an interview that NBC News here in the States did with the former vice president, Richard Cheney, and he recently had major heart surgery and everything, and they were talking about that, and he said, I'm just happy to be at home in Wyoming with my family. My grandson is trying to show me how to use the iPad. Some game, Angry Fowl, Angry Bird, something like that. So it's like, that's pretty stunning to me. Here you have this, the former vice president of the United States, who is, totally a gun-toting hunter out in the middle of nowhere, who is essentially has seen and sat with Angry Birds.
Well, but you've ruined my link. Well, I can link it. Thanks, Tracy.
You're welcome.
Talking of vice presidents, Apple is going to be 10 billion apps downloaded soon. You see, you ruined my link.
What?
There's going to be... I don't know if it has reached it yet. No, it hasn't. Not when we're recording. But Apple are counting down to 10 billion downloads of apps at the moment. And they're going to give away a... US $10,000 iTunes gift card. I didn't know you could buy gift cards that expensive.
Probably can't. I imagine it's a special
gold edition.
And, custom coded.
So at the moment it stands at 9.95 billion. So and it's going up by literally 100 a second. It's quite scary. I hope that's not actually real, because that is quite scary watching it count up. It's also slightly hypnotic, so I'm going to move on.
You know that at Apple, I've actually not been to their campus, but people who have visited people there, there is a wall. There's a big monitor wall that shows all of the apps being downloaded in real time. And apparently it just looks like a waterfall of app icons. They're just constantly streaming down the screen.
It'd been better if they were in green text, because then it'd be the Matrix.
The eye matrix.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about 3DS earlier. We mentioned it. But I got a question. 3DS was revealed this week. Don't worry, this is the iPhone and iPad gaming podcast. You haven't suddenly gone onto the 3DS podcast. But yeah, it was revealed the price was higher than iPod Touch 4. Games prices look like they're going to be from £30 to £40. Do you see this being? Do you see people actually getting an iPod Touch instead of a 3DS because of this? Because it's quite expensive.
I don't know if it's necessarily the same. I don't think it's a comparative choice. I don't think somebody's saying, like, I think I want to get an iPod Touch, but I really want a 3DS, and I'm only going to buy one. I mean, I do think that the pricing is a problem, but actually, I'm in the minority in thinking that the device is inappropriately priced. I don't think $250 US is that bad. I mean, people paid that for PSP. I think people will pay that for 3DS. I think they'll be able to make that argument. Where I think they're going to lose the argument on price is with the games. You know, here in the U.S., retailers have 3DS games listed for $40 to $50. That's way too high. If anything, they should have actually gone the opposite direction with their price. 3DS game, or sorry, DS and DSi games were anywhere between $30 and $40. I know a couple of Square Enix titles went with $39.99, which I thought was way too high. I think, given, you know, sort of the shakeup that iOS, you know, the App Store has made on the industry in the portable space, I think $29.99 is too high now. So if Nintendo had come out with a $250 portable and said, hey, you know what, we're going to offer these games, the majority of our games are going to be at $20. And maybe, you know, you have your Zelda because it's, you know, it's Zelda. Everybody, people are going to buy a DS just to play Zelda or just to play Kid Icarus. Maybe you push that up to 30, but you need to have a range of price points that are going to cater to a wide audience. You can't expect, I just don't think people are going to say, you know what, I'm willing to pay $40 for a handheld game when I've never paid that much before. And I think the 3D is worth it. I don't find that a compelling argument, particularly when you have two other devices, PSP, which has a load of really inexpensive games, given that they've been out for so long, and you have minis, which are just cheaper, you know, small form games, and you have iOS, which is extremely cheap, all the way down to 59p, 99 cents. So they could be, this could be their stumble. This could be problematic for them. I think that they'll correct. I think, you know, maybe in a year, it'll take a year, year and a half for Nintendo to realize that they're going to have to change their pricing structure with regard to software. But that'll be too late. By that time, Sony will have another portable on the marketplace and will likely take Apple's approach in terms of pricing. Well, it's not Apple's approach. It's just sort of how the App Store, shook out. And obviously, you know, iPhone will continue to grow. So I think that makes 3DS sort of a niche portable system. It's very unique, but I'm concerned, you know, about its mass market potential.
You know what, though, in this country, because if you think the US prices are high for the software, I've put it through the currency converter, and because the prices on DS games here are £30 to £40 at the moment. 3DS
ridiculous.
Games. 3DS games, sorry. DS is slightly lower, but yeah, £30, $47 to $63. Per game.
Yeah, because can't you get an Xbox and can't you get an Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 game for like £40?
You can get them for £12.
Well, I mean, like a new release. I'm talking about like.
Oh, okay. If it's a box new release, you can pick one up for £40. So it'll be the same price as the next gen, well, current gen, come console game.
But obviously, the thing with price with game pricing is effectively, you know, that. They're gonna, and even with the same with iPhone, they're gonna attempt to start a new console off at a high level and see what works. And obviously, at launch, if you're going out to buy a launch 3DS, then you're gonna, you know, traditionally buy maybe two or three games. So, but you know, it won't take long. And it kind of happened, I guess, on Wii, where people tried to release games at what they considered as the kind of console price for them, and then very quickly you realize that there's no market for them. So publishers have to develop games that cost, you know, a third of what they would have cost before, because they're going to charge half you know, half on the price. I guess the bigger issue is Nintendo haven't really said very much about what they're going to do with the digital download side of it. In fact, it's not even launching with it, is it? So, which is kind of crazy. But
they did go into depth. I mean, they did. There was a question that an American member of the press corps was asking about their 3DS shop, and said, and the response from Bill Trinan, who is one of the guys over at Nintendo of America, said, you know, when we announced that we were going to be doing legacy downloads for Game Boy games, we meant only Game Boy. We're only they're not doing Game Boy Advance downloads. So that,
what?
You know, it's kind of like, oh, that for me personally, though, the possibility of downloading digitally those Game Boy Advance titles, like Advance Wars, for example, was my primary reason for wanting a 3DS. And while there are some fantastic Game Boy and Game Boy Color games, Super Mario Land, for example, it kind of takes the shine off of that store for me. I mean, there's nothing to prevent them from going, you know, in a year from now saying, hey, yeah, we are going to do Game Boy Advance titles. And I think that's largely, you know, what that answer was largely a PR move to, you know, so they can have a big announcement to energize 3DS people about 3DS, you know, 12 months down the line. But you're right, John. I mean, given the lack of details about what they're going to be offering digitally and sort of their strategy moving forward in the next 12 to 24 months is a little bit disconcerting.
But and equally, to be fair to Sony, who haven't made a particularly, you know, who certainly have learned a lot, I guess you could say, over the life cycle of the PSP, they do deal with digital content a lot better than Nintendo does. I mean, it's just not.
Yeah.
Nintendo's never really had to because it's been so strong in retail. But I kind of, and you kind of almost forget when you're working, you know, every day in an industry and seeing it's moving so fast. People who are working every day in another industry that's being impacted or by this new industry, you know, you forget that they don't. It does take them. They have to, like, you know, balls it up to them to realize that what they thought was happening wasn't happening. You know, I think maybe they will be just surprised how much the consumer kind of views have changed on what, you know, game prices that aren't, you know, okay, obviously Resident Evil or something like that, but for the games that people are playing now and where the market is, you just, you know, $10 is easily the top you can charge.
Right. I'm going to move away from news, but I'm also going to, if you were listening to last week's podcast, you might have remembered the fact that I didn't mention the competition to win the Pocket Gamer app, which normally costs 59p, I think. But don't worry, I haven't forgotten about it. Well, I did forget about it, that's why I didn't mention it last week. But I've been cajoled by the higher-ups to mention it again. Essentially, if you weren't around 2 weeks ago to hear about it, it's podcast competition only, so you'll only hear about it on the podcast when I remember. And it's to win a copy of the Pocket Gamer Directory app, which basically is like a hub for our special magazines that are written solely for iOS devices, both the iPad and iPhone, about... Well, right now we've got the top 50 iPhone games. There's going to be an iPad one and other such joys as that. They're all specially written, so they're not just bits from the website or whatever. And they're also very professionally presented by X-Magazine, X-Top Magazine staff from some of the biggest UK magazines. So if you want a chance to win it, all you have to do is answer the simple question, which is... What are you most looking forward to on iPhone or iPad, or both, if you want, in 2011? Again, it could be hardware, it could be software, it could be whatever. If you give a reason as well, that'd be great. You don't have to, but obviously it'd be better against the others if you do have a reason. And if you could send that to podcast competition, that's podcast competition, all one word, at pocketgamer.co.uk. So that's podcast competition at pocketgamer.co.uk. We're going to be running this competition until next week, I think, will be the last opportunity next Friday. So, get to it. Send us through your suggestions. The best ones will win a free copy of the app. So, Oh, yes. No, wait. I've got to remember. Terms and conditions as well. Terms and conditions are at the bottom of the front page, pocketgamer.co.uk, right at the bottom. You should see a terms and conditions link. I always forget the terms and conditions. Right. I think it's time we went down to the room, mine. Let's do it.
Rimmer. Rimmer.
Nice.
Wow, what are those columns? It's like completely renovated down here.
Yeah, he's really cleaned this place up. Well, he, probably a cleaner. You never know. I don't know. Just something about the room mine strikes me. It's not a very clean man normally. But yeah, this is pretty good. I like the fountain. That's a nice touch.
Oh, this makes sense because it's been a year that the Rumor Miner has been in operation.
Yeah.
Sell it, maybe finally bringing in the dough, finally
part of his
mining all that coal.
Huh. Well, one thing though, why is the water really sort of murky and...
Don't touch that.
What the hell? What's the first rumor? Oh, how do you get this off your hands?
First rumor, Ubisoft skittish on iOS, banking on Nintendo 3DS instead.
Really?
Very interesting. Apparently out of the, you know, 3DS press hubbub, Ubisoft had a bunch of titles they announced. A new Rainbow Six, I can't remember what it was called. There were actually two Tom Clancy games announced on the same day, one for iPhone by Gameloft and then another by Ubisoft. And they're doing Rayman 3D. They're doing a couple of other games. Yeah, they're doing the Dinosaurs game. What's interesting, though, you've got to remember, it was only 2 years ago that Ubisoft held a had a financial call where Yves Guillemot basically said, we're pulling out of the DS market because we're not selling any games. I mean, it's essentially what he said. He skirted around the issue of sales by saying he didn't come out right and say our DS games aren't selling. What he said was piracy is so bad that it's influencing the market, which is another way of saying the third party software market has completely crashed. So, you know, and then shortly after that, remember, they were like, oh, we're doing iPhone and iPod touch games. And they released Assassin's Creed. And then they released, which unfortunately did not sell very well. And then they did Silent Hunter, and they did another game. But none of them did very well. And I remember having discussions with them shortly that summer, and they were kind of like, yeah, we don't know. We're kind of feeling things out. And then they've been quiet. They've been completely quiet. I haven't been able to, me personally, this is not the Rumor Miner, I have not been able to get anybody at Ubisoft to talk about iPhone. So
they might have just decided that they'll just hand IPs to Gameloft to handle for the iPhone then.
Because there was that big debate, wasn't there, that it was interesting. It was the first time with the Assassin's Creed where you assumed it was going to be a Gameloft game, and it came out a Ubisoft game, and then Gameloft got all kind of a bit kind of like lippy about how they got their own film licenses, and not just because Ubisoft got them, and blah blah blah. So there was it seemed to be a little bit of friction between the two companies about it.
Sibling rivalry.
Yeah,
it's interesting though. I mean, I personally like Ubisoft. I like a lot of their games. I like the way they approach. I mean, I love Assassin's Creed. I do think that a lot of their AAA titles, they do a very nice job. But I do think, you know, the way they approached iPhone was Assassin's Creed Discovery was a re-release of a DS game. That's not going to necessarily do like fantastic numbers. It didn't do fantastic numbers on DS, so why would it necessarily do, you know, really great on iOS, you know, 6 months later? I mean, you can always find the one exception to that sort of line of thinking is Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars, but I would also say that's Grand Theft Auto. So it's kind of a different, different franchise. I just think I worry that by going back to DS, you know, Sony's saying, okay, you know, we're going to go back to Nintendo. We're going to support this platform. That is, they keep putting their eggs in one basket rather than saying, look, we're going to invest in all of these areas and we're going to do a little bit in all of these areas and then see what works.
To be fair, they have had a strong history of supporting Nintendo devices at launch.
Oh, sure.
For both the Wii and the DS, they were one of the biggest Western publishers in terms of lineups.
I mean, I just kind of actually wonder that they do, they kind of feel kind of a little bit restricted because of Gameloft, that there is.
Yeah.
And partly that could be, you know, because if you look at the shareholdings, I mean, obviously they're separate companies, but there's a the Guillermo family have I think it's like a 15% or, you know, a fairly large chunk of both companies. So I guess there's a point at which they don't really want to be cannibalizing the sales of a company that is close to them.
We should point out to listeners who don't know that the Guillermo brothers are the heads of Gameloft, and the other brother, well, one of the brothers is the head of Gameloft and the other brother is the head of Ubisoft. Well,
there's five brothers, if you want
And the other three are at home. I don't know. Well, two of the Guillermo brothers are at the head of Gameloft and Ubisoft, and the Michel Guillermo founded Ubisoft with UV, right? Am I right in my history here?
Which one are you saying? Michel founded with
They both founded UV, and then went off and founded Gameloft. Sorry, there's a bit of background. That's why we're talking of the two companies, as if like they've got very close ties, because they have. John.
What do I say now?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, though, John. I mean, I think that was it was a curious decision that Ubisoft said, "Oh yeah, we want to do iPhone." It's like, well, Gameloft is doing a fine job. Why, you know, why are you going to pull your franchises from them when they're doing well by them, both commercially and critically, you know? So maybe they said, hey, yeah, you know what? That's right. Let's just go back to the way it was, and we'll just license out our franchises to them. I mean, and then it's better that way, because Gameloft knows the space. They know how to optimize for older handsets. They know how to go ahead and scale beyond iOS and to get those games onto different devices that aren't Apple.
The only thing is, from Ubisoft's point of view, you would perhaps argue that it's a large-ish, fast-growing part of the industry that they're not attached to at all. So, say, Gameloft sales this year will be something like $200 million. So, effectively, you know, that's 200. Obviously, they wouldn't be that big if they were running their own mobile side. But effectively, that's kind of $200 million they could have on their sales figures, which, you know, they're not going to have. And even with Gameloft doing stuff like releasing, you know, they're taking modern. I think they just released Modern Combat for the PlayStation 3 as a download only, as a multiplayer game. You know, so Gameloft's learning all this stuff about digital downloads, which is going to go into tablets and stuff, which Ubisoft just doesn't, you know, because hasn't operated in that space at all. It's going to be much harder for it to learn. So in a sense, EA has maybe a bit more of an advantage over Ubisoft in these kind of markets, because it has, obviously, EA Mobile is like an in-house kind of resource.
Yeah, well, and that's an interesting point, particularly with regard to EA, because it looks like EA is kind of getting their act together in terms of coordinating releases across multiple platforms, because beginning next week with Dead Space, both console and iOS versions will be available on the same day. That's a new thing for them.
Yeah, I know they've been working very hard, haven't they, for that?
Yeah, I think they deserve credit for that. I mean, I think, you know, as gamers, this is very informative for the podcast listener. You know, it is actually very difficult to make that happen, because it's not as though all the games are being created in the same office. You know, quite the opposite, actually, with Dead Space, because you have Visceral Games, who is in charge of Dead Space 2, which is in Redwood Shores in California. And then you have EA Mobile, which is in Los Angeles, who has said, okay, we want to have Iron Monkey develop the iPhone and iPad game, who are based in Australia. So you literally have these two games being developed on the complete opposite ends of the planet. And making that and lining up that release so they're available on the same day is difficult. I mean, so But it matters so much, because then they can say, here's the game, here's the experience, particularly because the iOS version of Dead Space is so intimately tied to Dead Space 2, both in terms of story and gameplay design, and literally in the ability to unlock content between the two. So, you know, I think they're gonna find that it was worth the effort to do that come next week.
So what's the second rumor?
It's so exciting, and I want to make sure you're sitting down, Will, because I know you've been waiting for Crafting Mama. Taito is finally going to release it for iPhone and iPod Touch.
No way! Oh my god! Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
unfortunately,
my god.
They are taking the cross-stitching out of it. I'm sorry, I know that was your favorite.
What? They're taking the cross-stitching out?
You can still crochet.
I'm not buying it then. I'm going to write an angry thread on a forum and boycott this. Until they bring back cross-stitching. How sad would that be?
Oh, Jesus.
I'm very upset with your decision to remove cross-stitching from Crafting Mama. Although funny, that would all be misspelt.
It's funny, you should cross-stitch it into some silk or something.
What if they did Crafting Mama, but for like different regions? So it was like Asian Crafting Mama, and it was like you had to like create silk. So you had to like deal with like the silkworms, and then there could be like African Crafting Mama, and you could like.
You're wasted in this job, Tracy.
I was thinking of Super Crafting Mama, where it has 5 extra characters with their own special crafting skills. It's an arcade release.
Yeah. You're not wasting
it. It's a light gun. It's a light gun crafting game.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Fire the stitch gun now. Very good.
Bring it next time.
reload.
Reload. Yeah.
Well, last rumor is actually a change to a rumor that we ran into down here a couple of months ago about the Captain America First Avenger movie and who is handling the iOS game.
Well, that was inscribed on that skull, wasn't it? With four
yes.
Five. Yeah, no,
which
that
is
was
very apt because Sega was supposed to publish that. So, they are no longer doing that. While Sega is doing the console game, it's actually Gameloft that is being rumored to be handling the game. And the rumor miner outlines the reason why, and he admits he was incorrect in thinking that it was Sega. And the reason why he believes now that Gameloft is handling it is because the Captain America movie is being handled by Paramount. And Gameloft has a well-established relationship with Paramount and have done a number of games based off of comic book adaptations that Paramount has produced, so including like Iron Man 2. So it makes perfect sense that they would be dealing with the mobile version of the Captain America movie game.
Well, I guess that's positive news because Spider-Man was pretty good.
Yeah, it was really good. I hope they do another one.
Again, I'm not really a Captain America fan. I don't really know anything about him except the fact he's got a shield just like the Stars and Stripes. there's silence. I think I'll fill it.
Why do you hate America, Will?
Yeah. Well. Excellent. I think. Well, I'm pretty sure it's going to be good. Anyway, I think that's it for the room miner this week, unless I'm mistaken.
That is it.
Ah, then we should follow this natural stream, because I heard it leads straight to the What We've Been Playing field. Thank you very much. Welcome to Radio Pocket Gamer. I'm your host. Now we're going to play some Lady Gaga.
Oh my god, you sound like the host of the Buzz Games.
Oh no, don't say that.
What we've been playing!
Tracy, What have you been playing this week?
Well, I wish I was playing Dead Space. That's what I was. I was not playing it, though. I was playing games that were not as exciting and likely not as good. I don't have any indication of how good Dead Space is because I haven't played it yet. But what I did play were two games, one which is coming soon called 3D Bio Ball, and the other which is already out on iPad called Zen Puzzle Garden. So let me tell you about Zen Puzzle Garden first. It's you are a student in a Buddhist temple who is tasked by your sensei to rake sand in these puzzle-like gardens. And the goal is to rake the sand in such a way that you don't step over the same bit of sand that you've already raked. So you basically have to cover the garden, cover the sand, by walking over each spot on the sand once. So in that way, it's kind of like a Sokoban game, but without the box. So it's actually rather clever. It's got wonderful graphics. It's by the developer Pickpoc, which did Flick Football. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, they did always quite a lot of those games, didn't they? Like four.
Yeah. So they're a good developer. I really like this game. It's got wonderful graphics, really nice style. But there are a couple of little features that are missing that prevent it from being really great. I remember sitting down and going through the first few puzzles and thinking, wow, this is really good. This is like a Silver Award title. Mm. This is great. And as the puzzles were gradually getting harder, I realized that there was no hint system. So if you get stuck, and let me tell you, some of these puzzles are really hard. When you get stuck, you have no way of figuring out the solution except for yourself. So if you could rake all but one square of a garden, and you'd be like, oh my God, I don't know how to get that last square without, you know, failing the puzzle. There's no in-game mechanism for that to be like, oh, hey, here, this is what you should do. Here's a hint. So it kind of takes, it can be really frustrating. There's also not a ton of puzzles given the price. There are 30 puzzles, and then you can buy an additional pack. And that's fine. I don't think it doesn't feel it doesn't feel short, but it definitely is, doesn't have as many levels as comparative to a lot of other puzzle games. But I still enjoyed it. I think it's good. If you like hard puzzle games, then you'll definitely enjoy this. But if you're looking for something that's much more sort of casual, you know, that you can just kind of toy around with the screen and not necessarily have to think very much, you know, kind of like an Angry Birds sort of experience, you're not going to like Zen Puzzle Garden because it's much more contemplative. It's much harder. The other game I've been playing is 3D Bio Ball, which is a game that's coming out, I believe, next week. And it's a ball rolling game. So you tilt your handset to maneuver a ball around these 3D stages. And what makes it kind of interesting, the reason why it caught my eye when the developer contacted me a couple of weeks ago was that it looks very good. The graphics are pretty good. Two, it reminds me of the old Crash Bandicoot games. It has that sort of, you know, cheesy style about it, which is kind of fun. And three, there's just a lot of, in the level design, there's a lot of like obstacles and power-ups, and you can upgrade your abilities and by spending coins and picking up special bolts that enable you to do these upgrades to your ball. Unfortunately, what I'm finding is that the controls are not quite tuned properly. So you're in these enclosed stages that have walls, these small, short walls on either side, surrounding each stage, because they're just essentially floating in space. And if you tilt hard enough toward one of those walls, your ball will roll up and over the wall, and you'll lose a life. So it's like, it just feels too loose, you know, it's not tight enough where it's like, okay, you hit that wall and you're not going over it because it's a wall. Other things, like there's a power up, for example, or not a power up, but an obstacle where you can roll over this switch and it causes an earthquake. And the earthquake is so substantial that it can actually bounce your ball out of the level and cause you to die.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit too powerful of an obstacle. So little things like that make it pretty frustrating. There's also, you know, when you're doing the level select, there are six worlds, and each world has like three levels in it. You can't select the individual levels within the world. So if you, for example, are midway through world two and say, oh, you know, I gotta go, like I gotta go do something. And you quit out of the app, it will save your progress as long as you don't quit the app, as long as you don't quit the multitasking of the app. But if you quit the multitasking and cancel the app and just shut it down, you have to start that entire world all over again. So it's okay. I don't think it's anywhere near as good as like Dark Nebula, for example. But this game, you know, I think it has some potential. I think with an update, it could be a lot better. Just some tweaks to tighten up the controls and to add that level, that individual level select for the worlds, to kind of make it a little bit more bite-sized and accessible. It could be a much better game, but was a little disappointed, sad to say, about. I was expecting a little bit more fun out of it.
Well, never mind. I will take the next position of what we've been playing, mainly because then it means that I don't finish and then have to then link into the next section, because that sounds uncomfortable. I have not been playing World of War very much this week due to other tasks that I've been doing. So I don't have a complete assessment of the game yet. But I'll describe it, just in case you haven't heard. It's a turn-based strategy game set during World War II, spread over a number of campaigns following the different paths of the main countries involved. So you've got Britain, USA, Nazi Germany. Well, I don't think they're called Nazi Germany. I think they're called something like Axis to avoid any controversy. And Russia. Soviet Union, of course. And you basically try and... There are certain points in history that you that the fights try to recreate. So you've got the invasion of Poland starts off the German campaign, for instance. It's unusual in turn-based way in the fact that it uses a real-time... Well, not real-time, but a simultaneous battle resolution system. So if you say you're going to move your piece from Warsaw to, I don't know, wherever, Krakow, the enemy piece wants to move from another place to Krakow, then your two pieces will fight at that point in the map. If you make a move across the border and the enemy makes a move across the same border, then you'll fight on the border. But the combat won't be resolved until the time in between your turns. So you're not quite sure what the enemy's going to do, and he's not quite sure, it's not quite sure what you're going to do. So it's all about trying to second-guess the opponent's movement and try and make it so that you outmaneuver them around the sides of the board or through the middle, try and catch them unguarded. From what I've played so far, I haven't played much, so I can't give a proper assessment yet. I'm never quite sure if the AI is cheating or not. But because there's a difference between outwitting someone and outwitting something. Because something you never quite know actually, because he's dealing with the actual moves. So it's dealing with the actual moves. So I'm never quite sure if it is. But I need more time of it to properly say. So it's not a particularly great podcast review, this one. But the next few days I'll be able to make a proper judgment. The actual the presentation's fairly nice. It feels like a board game. Which is no bad thing in my book, because I love board games. Yeah, and it's got some quite—I don't know—I don't quite like the cartoony sort of painting look of the cutscenes, where they're just basically still frames, characters, speech bubbles, and the dialogue's a bit corny, and the drawings themselves are a bit ugly. Not so keen on them. What? it looks interesting. I got to give it more time. So that's my assessment so far. Apologies, listeners. John.
Yeah, I've not really been playing very much. I kind of dipped into a few things, but not with a lot of conclusion. There's something I kind of played the most. It's a game called Geobrain. Which, I mean, it's kind of not really a game so much. It's actually odd because it's from a company who do maps, a German company who do maps, and it's kind of so they're using their kind of expertise in maps, and they're kind of having it's like a trivia quiz where you have to ask you questions that are geographically based, and you have to like choose the continent that the event or whatever happened in or person lived, and then choose the country, and then you have to
choose pick, the street,
pick where the city
the
is.
House number.
And it's just amazing how bad, and maybe not everyone's, but my geography is when you have to find not particularly obscure places in the world. Like, where's Munich in Germany? Well, I know now, but it's kind of a... Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a quite a niche type game. But it's... I kind of enjoy those trivia things. But the really weird thing, it's not actually out in America yet, which seems really strange, but it's only out in Europe. But I think they're kind of finessing it because it has various simple features like having an online leaderboard it doesn't have yet. So I guess they're kind of working on those kind of things. But it was, you know, if you're a more thoughtful kind of bent, it's interesting. There's another, I mean, again, not, I don't know where it counts so much as a game, but a kind of a... I think we headlined it Pokemon meets Twitter meets Foursquare, which is called Twinamon, which is kind of like a... it's like you basically log it. It's like a Twitter client that's kind of like kind of meshed with Pokemon. So you have little monsters that you kind of grow and then...
Are the monsters related to the people that you follow or followers?
No, they don't seem to be. I mean, I didn't get very far with it. And depending on where you are locationally, you can kind of send them off to attack kind of places in nearby. And then I think the Twitter thing kind of works more. You can kind of gain extra points the more you kind of Twitter about the game and stuff. There's been quite a few of these kind of games that have used, you know, they're kind of fascinating in sense how they're trying to use something like Twitter, which is... You know, it's not very gaming. It's kind of quite, you know, boring, really, isn't it? It's kind of like writing stuff. But they're trying to, I guess, use the interactivity that's happening all the time and build it into a game because you're coming back to Twitter all the time. So it's kind of built into a game. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. But I think it's one of those things you have to put after, not even like Pokemon, you have to play it for hours and hours and hours to kind of see. And I guess fundamentally, kind of, the problem is with these things, they kind of get in the way of, if you want to just use Twitter for tweeting, then you don't really want a game attached to it. Because that's, if you want to play a game, you want to play a game. You don't want to kind of have something between the two.
If each follower was like a little monster, that'd be good.
It would, yeah.
I could get you and Keith to have a fight and level you up so I could take on Tracy.
Well, I guess you could do that, couldn't you? Because you could do the more tweets you've done, the better your character was. So
yeah.
That would then encourage you to
tweet more about your breakfast. Yeah, and you're going to bed now. Goodbye, followers. Hello, I've woken up. I love Twitter. I don't post that, listeners, just in case you think that I do that. Well,
yeah, it doesn't sound like any of us have really played anything that's fantastic. I mean, it's
that time of the year, though, isn't it? It's that kind of January where everyone rushed to get everything out for Christmas. And,
exactly.
Know, it's kind of like a... I think just industry-wise, it's a little bit quiet. You know, I guess we have Mobile World Congress in a couple of weeks' time in Barcelona, mm-hmm. which is like a big hardware show. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the we're going to get, you know, Dead Space aside, maybe. But I think everyone else is just kind of getting back into the new year and just kind of like thinking what we're going
to
do.
I'm going to say, and then so I have to give kudos to EA again on this. I think they've for a few years now realized there's an opportunity in this in the first couple months of the year to release like a good game. They did it with Burnout Paradise on consoles. They're doing it with Dead Space 2 this year on consoles and iPhone. I mean, I think there's such a push to get things out during Christmas, and I think there's a valid, you know, argument for that. But I also think that it would be worth holding on to, you know, one really good title and releasing it in January or February, because people, you know, want something. You know, Dead Space is getting a lot of attention, partly because it does look really good. And I think it would get attention no matter what time of year it was released. But it gets even more attention because it's the only thing that's, you know, big game that's coming out this month. And, you know, certainly if Gameloft had, you know, let's say they had held on to Asphalt and were, you know, released it this week, it might have, you know, generated a little bit more buzz than
Christmas. They've got Starfront Collision.
Oh, they haven't, they? Yeah.
They said it was going to be January, but that doesn't look very likely now because they haven't talked about it for a while.
You were going to say Shadow Guardian?
I was going to say Shadow. It was one of those games that kind of seemed to get a little bit lost, didn't it? It's kind of, you know, it might have, as an original IP, might have done a bit better.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Shadow Guardian would have been a better January release, I think, than right before Christmas.
I just have to say, I haven't played this game yet, but I just noticed it. I think it's just come out today. And the title is just fascinating. It's called Hamlet, or The Last Game Without MMORPG Features, Shaders, and Product Placement. That's the title. That's kind of interesting.
I like that.
I've no idea what we're doing. It's packed with tricky puzzles.
That's the end of this week's podcast. I hope you've all thoroughly enjoyed it. Next week, I'm going to have a good microphone, you'll be all pleased to know. So I won't be going into the microphone all the time, because this headset mic is crap. Cost me 12.
That's nice.
Yeah, I'm moaning now, sorry. So all it leaves for me to say is thank you very much to my guest.
That's great.
Thank you very much to Tracy Erickson.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Thank you to John.
Oh, thank you.
Jordan, sorry. And yes, thank you for listening. I've been Will
Wilson.
You've been listening to Pocket Game iPhone and iPad Podcast, episode number 111B. Good night. Well, good morning. Good afternoon.